Hi, my name is Journey, and I'll be the co-host on this week's episode of One Fly Trio. Find out more about my journey from housing insecurity in Harlem to going to Columbia Law on a full tuition scholarship.
One Fly Trio is a lively and engaging podcast designed to be your guide and mentor as you navigate the often challenging world of higher education. Your host, Linnell, a college admissions and financial aid guru,
and Rashid, a dedicated advocate for the success of underrepresented communities, team up with a rotating guest host who has lived the first generation limited income fly experience.
One Fly Trio will explore all aspects of the college journey, from college essays and financial aid and course selection to social life, internships, post-graduation plans, and more. We take a deep dive into the factors that contribute to success in college and beyond, demystifying areas that have historically been challenging for underrepresented communities.
Each episode is packed with real stories, expert advice, and actionable tips, all delivered in a fun, easy-to-digest format. Join us on One Fly Trio as we break down barriers, challenge stereotypes, and empower students to achieve their dreams. Because when it comes to success,
we're all in this together. Journey, thank you so much for being here with us today. Really excited for you to be on the show.
Thank you guys for having me.
Of course, of course. Can you tell us a little bit about you? You know, what can you share about your story and your background to help our listeners appreciate who you are?
Yeah, well, hey guys, I'm Journey. I am a first generation Caribbean American. You know, my father's from Antigua, my mom's from St. Kitts, respectively. Rashid, shout out. he also shares some Antiguan heritage. And you know what? It's really good when you see people that leave the island and are, you know, kind of just like making their own way in the U.S. You know, I come from a working class background. And when I mean working class, I mean really working class. My dad was a carpenter all my life. My mom did an assortment of things, cleaned houses, cooked for restaurants and small kitchens. And when I say working class, I mean at the end of every 2 weeks, they're sitting down at the dining table and figuring out how we're going to pay rent. You know, things that didn't concern me as a kid, but, you know, the more and more I grew up and kind of realized the financial situation, it was hard. It was hard to make it work. And I mean, you know, some years we definitely faced lots of financial and housing insecurity. I think my story intimately involves homelessness. That's something that is no big secret. It's a part of my story. And you know what? Before, it used to be something that I was really ashamed of, but I was a kid then and trying to navigate being in the shelter system as a teenager, doing homework, trying to keep my head, trying to go to college, which again was just such a big goal for myself, although I had no real way of getting there. So that's kind of what my story centers on. I'm a New Yorker. That's also another big part of my story. Bronx born, Harlem raised, very proud of being a New Yorker. There's just a different level of resilience, of learning how to navigate and weave in and out of like tough situations, you know, in your childhood. So I think those are the things, those are the key things that really make up who Journey is.
I love it. Thank you for going so deep and being so concise with it. If we could sort of pull on some of those threads a little bit, you made mention of the fact that college was an aspirational sort of this thing you wanted to do. Why was it important for you to go to school? And as you reflect on sort of what your situation was or some of the things going through your mind at the time, as you sort of balance that, hey, this is an aspirational dream versus mm-hmm. where you're at today and trying to bridge that gap, so to speak.
Yeah. So, you know what? My parents, because of just, you know, the time in which they were born and then also being born on the island, I mean, college really wasn't they didn't have the opportunity to go to college, right? Only the really wealthy islanders or foreigners had the luxury of going to a foreign college or maybe the one small college that a different island maybe has. So I think both of my parents only completed high school. And even then, I'm not really sure. And you know what? Back then as a kid, it used to be something that I used to look at with a sense of shame, almost. And that's a part of my story, I guess, that also just makes me a little mad looking back on it, because my parents really had no choice in that matter, and they did the best with what they had, you know? So my parents instilled in me a love of learning, even though they themselves didn't get an opportunity to, you know, climb high on the educational achievement ladder. And they always kept on telling me, you have to go to college, you have to go to college. And the thing about, you know, going to college is they didn't really tell me what I would have to do once I got to college, just that I had to get there. Right. If you go there, you have to graduate. And especially, you know, being a first-gen student and not being in a household where both of my parents or even one of my parents have college degrees, my depiction of college was really just people walking around with books in their hands, like in movies. I know if you guys seen like Drumline or something, like everybody's in college or like super stressed, but you don't really know what they do. So that was mine. I mean, that was just kind of how I thought and conceptualized college. And looking back, honestly, I don't think that that is a lie. You do walk around with books in your hands. You are super stressed. But there's more to college that I wasn't able to see at that point. And honestly, I think Alexander Hamilton scholars kind of helped. Shout out Linnell, shout out Rashid, helped kind of bridge the gap for me in understanding what college was and helping me kind of get past that hurdle.
And talk a little bit more about that, right? What were some of the things that you began to unpack or understand that started to make this aspirational goal of going to college more realistic and more tangible for you? You spoke about AHS, but what were some of the other more tangible steps you started to take that our listeners could start leaning into as well from their perspective?
Well, in high school, I got involved in a lot of clubs. And a lot of hammies, even now currently, you know, I'm an incoming 1L at Columbia University. So a lot of hammies will email me. Oh, thanks, guys. A lot of hammies will email me and, you know, LinkedIn me and tell me, what should I be doing? What should I be doing now? And honestly, get involved in your high school clubs. I did student government. I did musical theater. I was on like a planning committee. I did benefit concerts for my high school. Like, get involved. I think that is a key part of college. It's a silent part of college almost, right? College is very important as far as academics. You know, there's a huge emphasis on that. But college is a huge networking opportunity. So build your social skills in high school. It probably is one of the easiest things you can do. Also read. Get your reading comprehension up. Pick up a book right now. Seriously. Pick up a book, because when you get to college, you're just reading so much and you're reading about things that you don't want to read about. And so if you can just make it easier on yourself and read books you like, read books that are different, I recommend reading nonfiction books because that's almost exclusively what you're going to get in college. Just familiarize yourself with that sort of wheelhouse. Try to get your math up if you can. At least for me, I know that was something I struggled with coming from a school that didn't emphasize math and science, or at least not to a place where I went to college and felt comfortable. I thought I was a great student in high school, definitely was the top of my class. And I got to college, I took quantitative reasoning my first semester. And the first assignment, first major project was like a huge Excel spreadsheet. I got a 69 and I came back to my dorm and I cried. I was like, I'm not supposed to be here. Yeah. And it's all a part of the process. So social skills, work on those social skills, pick up a book. And if you can do anything math related, please do. Cause that's something looking back, I definitely wish I would have did.
Appreciate that.
Journey, I just want to go back and add a point of clarification. You talked about being an entering 1L at Columbia. And for our listeners who might not know that lingo, Journey will be joining the first year ranks of Columbia Law School. pretty good for somebody who was homeless for a little while. That you've gone a long way.
Yes. Oh, let me tell you. Oof. Yeah. It's been a journey, man.
What's really funny is you were raised in Harlem, and Columbia Law School is in fact in Harlem. And so while you have metaphorically traveled a really long way, literally, you actually are still in the same neighborhood.
Full circle, literally just up the block. Oh my God, it's going to be great walking to class. I can bike to class. I think the winters are going to be tricky because I got to walk. Hell, but I'll be all right.
Now, you say the winters are going to be tricky, but let's back up for a moment and talk about college. Your college choice was maybe a little bit unexpected, and I'm wondering if we can talk about that. You chose what we affectionately refer to as a PWI, a predominantly white institution in the state of Maine. And talk a little bit to us about how you got there and why you made that choice.
Yeah. Shout out all my U Bears. I don't know if anybody listening is going to be a U Bear, but so Bowdoin College is in Brunswick, Maine. It is a four-year private institution. It's what my college counselor referred to as a baby Ivy. I didn't even really take that terminology seriously. They just told me it would be an opportunity to get out of New York. And I was like, yeah, sure. As far as Bowdoin goes, there are a few things that kind of factored into my decision to go to Bowdoin. Number one, another student from my high school went to Bowdoin, came back, and did a presentation for our class. And at the end of the presentation, I look around and everybody's like half asleep or like uninterested because she's showing the PowerPoint and it's like her in the snow. Her walking to class in the snow, her, you know, outside with her friends in the snow. And we're all from Harlem. We're all like, hell no, nobody's going over there. And you know what? At the end of the class, she came to me and she said, I think you should apply. You might like it. And you know what? In my head, because I wasn't married to any specific lofty idea of a college, and I know a lot of first-gen students.
Not even Drumline?
Not even Drumline. No. Not even Drumline. Like a lot of first gen students like me, when someone asks, oh, what's your dream school? That is a very weighted question. A lot of us don't have dream schools. We're just trying to get in somewhere and make it work. And that was me junior and senior year. I didn't have a dream school. And I mean, if someone would have asked me back then, I probably would have conjured up an answer like Harvard or Cornell, because they're big schools, they're prestigious, and that is what everybody tells you you should want to aspire to. But I didn't have the knowledge back then to know what it would take to be at Harvard, what it would take to be at Cornell, or what it would take to succeed at those places. So when she came to me and told me I should apply to Bowdoin, I was like, okay, kind of in a sense of what do I have to lose? Right. Another thing that factored into me choosing Bowdoin after I became accepted was my father. My father is a carpenter. He's worked all over the U.S. Since he's immigrated back way, way, way in the 1980s. And I told him that I got into a school in Maine and I was choosing between Bowdoin, Boston College, Bucknell. Money was also a big factor. And these are the schools that gave me great packages and really took care of me and recognized my need as a low income student. But the location was something that I didn't really think about. My father kind of put it in perspective for me when he said, do something different. You know, you've been in Harlem almost all of your life around people that look like you. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. I think that is what built my confidence. As a young teen major, I mean, my high school was predominantly Black and Hispanic. Everyone kind of had the same first-gen, low-income thing going on, so it wasn't anything to make me feel like I was a sore thumb. It was just the norm. Everyone's families, you know, were low-income, or not everybody, you know, either had two parents or maybe one parent, or everybody's family, you know, would be the first in their family to go to college. So he emphasized going to Maine as an opportunity to kind of branch out and and do something different and see a different part of the world. And he said, you know, Maine is beautiful. It has a lot of trees from what I've heard. I don't know if he actually has been to Maine himself, but I think he kind of heard that Maine had a lot of trees and it would be an opportunity for me to get out of the city. And I took his advice to heart and I committed to Bowdoin. Then I also became a Geoffrey Canada Scholar after I committed. So that was like, oh yeah, I definitely made the right decision. And the Geoffrey Canada Scholarship is a 4-year scholarship. They give you mentorship, opportunities, access to networking. They take care of you really well financially. I mean, I didn't have to take out any loans for undergrad. I got a MacBook. And for me as a first gen student, hearing that I would get a MacBook, I was like, oh yes. Cause I did my college application process off my phone. I did that off my phone. So to have a school that was going to give me a MacBook, I was like, nobody could tell me anything about Bowdoin when I first got there. So those are just a few things that made me choose the school. And you know what, looking back, I think it was a great decision.
I would guess that, and again, for our listeners who don't know, Bowdoin really is considered to be one of the most selective small liberal arts schools in the country. So getting in there is a lot like playing the same odds as an Ivy. But the classes were much smaller.
Yes.
I would guess your instruction was a bit more of an intimate setting. And I would imagine that has probably set you up fairly well for law school. But once you got there, what did you decide to major in?
So I majored in sociology with a government minor. And this is for all of my like first gen kids that absolutely have no idea what you want to major in. The first semester, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because you take almost all of the same core fundamental classes the first semester. So for the first semester, I did nothing but be a student at Bowdoin. And academically, I would say, other than quantitative reasoning, I fared pretty decently. You know, I really, really liked my reading seminar. I still remember the books that I read from that seminar, and I still remember the professor. It was a small seminar of about 15 students. We'd get a book to read, I think, every 2 weeks. So again, you're reading books at a pretty rapid pace, right? This is kind of from semester end to semester, semester beginning to semester end. We're reading these books, we're discussing it. I really like that class. I took another course that was, I believe, in like history or something, kind of giving you a baseline, being able to talk about current events. And I took one other course. I believe it was I did something artsy. I took chamber choir. I did that. And I did one other class, which I probably can't think about, but I had a 5-credit course load when I got to Bowdoin. I chose sociology because sociology dealt with a lot of the topics that I had been discussing, thinking about, and then also like just experiencing all my life as a Black woman, as someone that lives in an urban neighborhood, as someone that is first gen. You know, I'm always thinking about policy or race and policy. I'm always thinking about, you know, how policy affects education. I'm always thinking about how race affects, you know, economics, you know, and I'm not only thinking about it, but I'm living it. So sociology, at least for me, seemed like a no-brainer. It seemed like a place where I would be able to develop my research skills and my reasoning, and just be able to see things in a multifaceted way. So that for me is what drew me to sociology. I added the government minor on after I decided that I would like to be able to think about all of these issues about race and about, you know, education and about policy, but just in a different context. And for me, the context was law. So I recommend sociology as a solid major for any student that is just interested in exploring. You know, you're interested in talking. It's a discussion-based major. It's a paper-heavy-based major. But it's a major that has allowed me to just be a world citizen in the broadest context. I can kind of talk about almost any type of current event or issue with anyone. And I think sociology gave me the tools needed to do that in an educated manner, not just say anything out of my mouth, okay? You know, be able to not only vet statistics and kind of vet quantitative data, but also consider qualitative data and use it to make reasoned arguments. So that's, shout out sociology majors.
Now I have one question for you. Did you decide on sociology before you got to Bowdoin or after you got to Bowdoin?
After.
Okay.
After.
Was it unnerving to you to start college and not know what you wanted to major in? Was that stressful?
Yeah, that was stressful because, again, you know, you think that getting to college, especially as a first-gen student, you think that getting to college, oh, I got in and I'm going to go in August. You think that would be the thing that would reduce your stress after so many years of people telling you you have to get to this place? It's only the beginning. It is only the beginning of stress because now that you're here, you have to figure out how to be around other students, how to be a college student, how to manage your time. And especially, you know, coming from the background that I come from, my parents weren't hand-holding me. They dropped me off and they said, you're going to do great. And I'm like, thanks. You know, they give you well wishes. They pray for you. They tell you, you know, you're going to do fine. And whenever I check in with them on my weekly phone calls, they say, how's college going? And I'd go, I like it. It's going great. Just because I never felt like I had the language to talk to my parents about college. That just wasn't a realm that they helped me with or that they really knew about intimately enough to be able to give me assistance with. So when I had to choose a major, I couldn't call up my dad and say, hey, should I do sociology or should I do this English major that I was thinking about? You know, he's going to tell me, you know, do whatever one is going to get you a job.
Right.
And that's sound advice, but it's not what you want to hear as a college student who's, you know, having to think about how is this major? How am I going to use this major to not only, you know, get good grades and put myself in the best position as a student, but how am I going to use this major to get me a job after? It's a lot of pressure for someone from a low income background to think about all at once. So definitely was a little stressful.
So my last follow-up to that one is if you were to talk to a first-gen high schooler, you know, you several years ago, and they were really stressing about not having chosen a major, what would you tell them?
Well, I would tell them first semester, be a student, right? And this is advice that advice that is applicable in any kind of higher ed context, right? If you're going to college, first semester, be a student. You're going to law school, first semester, be a student. Don't worry about specializing, right? Worry about exploring, branching out, building that social network. You know what? I will say definitely in college, the thing that I think really helped me was just my ability to develop social capital.
Mm-hmm.
And when that means social capital, I mean, I'd be the kid going to office hours. I'd be the kid going to office hours even probably when I had no assignment really to talk to the professor about, right? I'd be the student that is at the off-campus study office or at the, you know, student resources office, just kind of talking about literally anything. Hey, this is something I'm interested in. Just so they can see you. Social capital helps. And it helps you, especially in your first semester, because you're able to build that safety net. And that's something that a lot of first gen kids, especially in my experience, don't have. You have a question. You can't necessarily turn to mom or to dad or to grandma. So it would be in your best interest to branch out on campus so you have more people to talk to. You know, you have more people who can potentially answer your questions when you're in a bit of a tricky situation. So I would just say, be a student the first semester. Join a club. try to get into a routine. That was really hard for me because no one tells you how to study. And especially if you're coming from a high school where maybe the support or the resources were not there, you haven't had an opportunity to develop those habits. You're not coming from like Phillips Exeter or another prep school. You know, you're coming from either a local public or a charter or what have you. So try to find a study group, a group of like-minded individuals, build that kind of social network up. And then I would say, honestly, you don't have to think about major until sophomore year, first semester. That's when it gets a little bit stressful. But if you've been playing your cards right, again, talking around, talking to upperclassmen, talking to your professors, it'll help you get a good sense of what you want to do. And at least that's in my experience.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that. So I was going to start pulling on some of the threads around thematically what you were sharing, right? Growing up in a place where it was a majority of West Indian, Caribbean, Black, Hispanic, sort of background individuals, you know, your perception of school was drumline. And then you show up to a PWI in the middle of Maine. You started talking a little bit about the importance of beginning to socialize and develop those relationships. What were some other things that you did to really begin to acclimate and to make yourself feel comfortable, especially as you've already mentioned, right? Your typical support network was not as in tune or as aware, right? So just curious about some of those things. And you spoke about socialization. Was there anything else that you did in the early part?
Well, I will say, though, I don't want to make it sound like my socialization or my transition was made extra easy because I was like talking to people. I faced quite a bit of culture shock. And I think any first-gen student going away from home, whether it is to a huge state, you know, university in another state, whether it is to a private institution, you're going to be thrown in there with students from all walks of life. And I think that's the beauty, but it's also a bit uncomfortable at first, admittedly. I mean, you're not in Kansas anymore. I definitely wasn't. I wasn't in Harlem. Anyone could have told me that. I woke up every day and that was 100% true. I was like, I am not on 125th. I am in Brunswick, Maine. You know, stuff closes around 7 p.m. It's cold. What people do for fun there is at least not what I did for fun in high school. It's huge drinking and beer culture kind of up there, especially at PWI and more private institutions, definitely at bigger public party schools. And you have to take all that in. For many people, maybe this is your first time living with a direct roommate. That's not a family member. I know it was my first time, you know, not living with people, but living with people who weren't related to me. I had three of them and I had to kind of figure out how to navigate and how to make peace in the space now that I'm here. So I would say socializing helps, finding your community helps. I think GCS definitely did me a big service in that way because I got to make friends before the summer. So I had at least four other people that I felt like I could connect to. Also, you know, people of color, women of color that were first gen and low income. So I had a little bit of a community. I would also say join clubs. I did the judicial board my freshman year, and that also helped ease the transition again because I'm talking to upperclassmen. I'm getting to know them. They're giving me a little bit of the lay of the land, you know, what I can expect. I know I'm a person that doesn't like to walk into any situation blind. Maybe that means I hate surprises. I don't know. But I don't like to walk into situations blind. I like to be as prepared as I can be. And I think those are the things that help the most. Definitely GCS, socializing, but also club involvement. And you know what? I also think vision. Just understanding why you're here. I'm here to get my degree, right? And that what that means is, you know, you can kind of release yourself from this pressure to, I don't want to say make college this big deal, but often I'll hear, and I heard throughout my 4 years, that college is supposed to be the best 4 years of your life. It definitely wasn't mine. I mean, it was a good part of my life, but I wouldn't say that it's the best. And so if you release yourself from that pressure, then you don't have to, you don't have to do things that you're uncomfortable with in order to fit in. You can just be yourself, you know, because you're here for a means to an end. Simple as that.
And for our listeners, real quick, GCS?
Jeffrey Canada Scholars. It's a program at Bowdoin, like I mentioned, named after Jeffrey Canada. Jeffrey Canada is the founder of Harlem's Children's Zone, which is great. Another full circle moment. I went to high school literally around the corner from Harlem's Children's Zone. And it's always been such a great resource in the community. I mean, they pay kids to like tutor other kids. It's a place where kids can go and play basketball, just something to really get students off the streets after five, you know, because that is just a pretty precarious time for teenagers growing up, and they can kind of get into all random things. And HCZ was the kind of the catch program. So when I became a Jeffrey Canada Scholar, I was like, wow, this is great. So shout out to GCS.
And Journey, am I correct that your Harlem Children's Zone full circle moment didn't end there, did it?
With Jeffrey Canada? I met him.
Did you do some volunteering there?
When I was younger, in high school, yeah, because it was just a place to go. It was like, hey, you want to go to HCZ? Sure. And you should just walk right around the high school, walk right around the block, and go. And it's still there. So it's good to see that it's still holding up.
I love that. So you spoke a little bit about, you know, the fact that you've gotten into Columbia Law School, right? And so very curious from your perspective, when you stepped into school and you were thinking about things from an undergraduate perspective, and you've already made it very clear, be a student in the beginning. Was your intention once you got into a further class that you were going to go to law school, or did that change along the way? How did you get to the point where you said, all right, law school is what it is? What did that journey look like? Help share that to our listeners.
Okay. Funny story. I totally did not think that I was going to end up going to law school, wanting to be a lawyer, wanting to practice. I came to Bowdoin, and the high school that I went to, I did musical theater all 4 years. First year, freshman year, I did like production behind the scenes. Then sophomore year to senior, I was on stage and I was like, you know what? It wasn't really a major at Bowdoin. I think you could minor in music, I believe, at the time, or do something in theater. I was like, why don't I just do musical theater, right? So I came to Bowdoin thinking and hoping, silently dreaming, praying that I'd somehow come to this PWI miles and miles away from New York and end up on Broadway. That didn't happen for me. I did chamber choir for 2 semesters my freshman year and struggled. Isn't that crazy? Not because I couldn't sing, but because I cannot sight read. Did not think about that. So I had to kind of reassess. And then also my parents weren't happy that I told them that I was going to be on Broadway. They were like, yeah, but what are you going to do for a job? I was like, that is the job. So I had to reevaluate. And I think where my story starts is really at a nonprofit. I interned at Literacy Partners my freshman year. And again, the most general internship ever. I believe I was doing kind of like project management for that summer. For my first gen students, you don't have to do anything that is super, it was pretty demanding and enriching job, but you don't have to do anything that's like super lofty unless you're going into the sciences or whatever. But if you're a non-science student like myself, volunteer at a nonprofit, fill your summer with something that is going to give you exposure to other people and just give you some professional skills that can be applied to any field, right? So I did that. First summer, and we got an extra shipment of Just Mercy by Bryan Stevenson. And they told me, hey, do you want one of these books? I mean, people aren't really reading them. Literacy Partners is a nonprofit that kind of helps students and their parents learn reading together, learn literacy together, hoping to kind of bridge the gap and help students in New York City be more literate overall. great, great nonprofit. Have a surplus of books. I took it home. I think I read it back to front in 2 days. I was like, oh yeah. And you know what? Not everybody is going to have that, this is what I want to do moment, right? But I think that throughout your journey in college, you should always just be constantly checking in with yourself. How does doing this make me feel? I think it's a great starting point because you might not have that kind of, you know, huge star-studded moment in which the stars align and you see fireworks. It might be simple as, oh, I really like doing this. And then you just see what is going to be the path to take you to this job. Ask around, look on LinkedIn, consult any network of people that you have available and kind of see what's going to get you there or as close to being there as you can make it. So that is how I really have arrived to law, right on the back of Brian Stevenson. I don't know if, I mean, I've always really liked to help people. I've always wanted to be in a serving profession. And I think that is largely due to seeing my parents struggle growing up, always wanting to make sure that I could be in a position to help people who, you know, are kind of in the same situation. And I think law is a great profession. Law touches every area of our lives. So, you know, if you ever want to be a public servant in the purest form, I would recommend law. Not everybody agrees, but I 100% plan to do something public interest focused.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing. And to our Fly listeners, if you're not familiar with Brian Stevenson, look him up. Equal Justice yes. Initiative. He does some incredible things yes. Related to justice and trying to drive great reform within our country. Just absolutely incredible. Linnell, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Look like no, it's okay. I actually, Journey, wanted to talk about probably the last 2 weeks of your law school process and the last 2 weeks of this journey, because it's been a wild ride. And, you know, I would love for you to talk a little bit about acceptance to law school, paying for law school, where did it meet expectations? Where did it leave you? And just kind of take us through the last few weeks, if you would.
Yeah. Linnell, you know all about this already. Linnell and I have had extensive conversations. Me breaking down damn near. Sorry for cursing. I don't know if that's a curse. Curse word. But just not having the best time when it came to confronting the reality of graduate education. The past 2 weeks, probably like past like 2.5 to 3 weeks. So let's start from the beginning. When I started this law school journey, I think I had the same approach to law school that I had to college, which is that I don't care where I go. I just want to go to law school. I just want to get the legal tools and I just want to obtain a JD, right? I will say, though, that much like undergrad, graduate school, there are things that you learn throughout this process that you just don't anticipate or have the foresight for. I will say that the legal profession is, how can I put this diplomatically? Where you go matters because it will give you just different levels of access to certain things. And as a first gen student, that wasn't something that I was concerned with or really thinking about. So I applied broadly, but only in New York because I wanted to stay in my apartment. I live at home and I wanted just to be able to be around my support system of friends and family throughout this process. I didn't want to do the big move like I did with undergrad. I definitely was not going back to Maine, although the people at Maine Law School were very, very lovely when I met them at the LSAC fair and I told them that I went to Bowdoin. I wanted to stay somewhere familiar so I could really just tap into my legal education. So I applied broadly. I got into all of the schools I applied to, which was amazing. And at this point, I was so excited to have been getting acceptances at all. I was working 40 hours a week as a paralegal at a law firm. And this is like big girl work. No one told me about work after undergrad. I was woefully unprepared for just the different level of time management that it would take to be a working young professional. I remember one time I got home after like a really stressful day and I told my dad, "You got up every day and did this for 40 years?" He was like, "Yeah." I was like, "Oh, I don't know. I'm on my first year out here and I'm ready to throw in the towel. I can." And my dad was a carpenter. So my dad would get up every day at 4 a.m. and go work in the freezing cold to go build corporate buildings. So I was like, if I'm inside a corporate office working from 9 to 5, 9 to 6:30 sometimes, and I am just exhausted and I've had it up to here, I cannot see how you, for my whole childhood existence, was doing more than what I'm doing outside in various temperatures from 4 a.m. till whenever you got off. Kudos to you. Mm. So I applied broadly. I got into my schools. And the point that I was really having an issue with was the finances. Law school is a big expense. It is not cheap. And I had sticker shock because I was getting my financial aid packages back for a lot of the big ticket schools like New York University School of Law, Columbia. And they were telling me I owed them hundreds of thousands of dollars. And even still then, I was getting advice that these are great bargains. But as a first-gen student, I was uncomfortable with incurring that amount of debt. I think I'm not unique in that. In my experience, a lot of first-gen students struggle with money and being comfortable with spending money and being comfortable with having money because there is a scarcity mindset. There is a, you don't want to owe anyone, you don't want to take out too much, you kind of want to, you only want to take out just enough. You want to borrow just enough or a little less so you don't have to struggle like a lot of us witnessed our parents struggle with, you know, owing other people and just being in constant debt. So that was a big, big issue for me. But Columbia swooped in and gave me a full tuition scholarship for 3 years. So, man, I was sitting down to my table. I think I told Linnell this story. I was sitting down to my table about to write scholarship, about to just start stuff scholarship applications. Cause I was like, all right, if I go to NYU, I had fully set my mind on going to NYU, very public interest focused school. Columbia, the financial aid package was a little ridiculous. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to go where it's slightly cheaper. And I just planned to kind of tough it out for the 3 years. I think lots of us first gen kids, we're fighters and we're going to try to do what it takes to be able to achieve and meet the goals that we want to. So if that means for 3 years, I just kind of have to live, kind of way under what the budget was, that's what it would take. Sat down to the table to start writing these scholarship applications, seeing if, you know, I can convince someone to give me some money to, you know, lessen off this big price tag. Got an email from Columbia to check my portal. Wasn't expecting an email from them. And found out that I got a Bridge to Opportunity scholarship. And apparently they only give one every year. So.
And tell us a little bit, a Bridge to Opportunity is very specific for a particular audience. You want to tell us a little bit more about it?
So the Bridge to Opportunity scholarship was developed August 2021. And it's for one law school student in the incoming class. And they've identified like that you're a student who has faced adversity, but then you also have promise in the legal field. So I think Columbia and a lot of other schools, what they're doing is they're recognizing that that first gen, the problems that you encounter as a first generation student don't stop at college. They continue through graduate school, and even more FGLI kids are deciding that they want to pursue graduate degrees. And I think institutions are recognizing that, hey, these problems don't stop when it comes to financial insecurity or housing insecurity or just general not really knowing how to confront something you want so bad, you know? So it is a scholarship that's given to one incoming student, and for 3 years, they completely just free you from owing anyone that much money, and you get access to mentorship opportunities and networking opportunities. And I told Linnell, you know, when I got it, I'm so grateful because they gave this to the right person. I will not waste this at all. You know, this is something that I have wanted, and I was going to try to figure out any way that I could obtain it. But now that they've kind of taken that away from me, I'm going to show them that it was worth the investment. So I'm excited.
Journey, I won't forget the conversation we had where we were, you know, kind of doing the math on the amount of debt it would take to get through 3 years of law school, not just the tuition, but the living expenses that go with it, because law school is such an incredible commitment of time and energy that you cannot have a full-time job and go to law school. So you have to, in most cases, borrow for your living expenses as well. And we were looking at those numbers, and I remember you telling me, I am being asked to borrow more money than my parents made in several years. And other people telling you, yeah, this is kind of what it is. Like, this is not abnormal, but just the discomfort that created in you, because it was such an incredibly large amount of money. And you know, when we talk about Hamilton Scholars, we talk about recognizing young change makers as high schoolers. And you were selected because we saw this in you in 11th grade. And I think this just shows that this is part of the fabric of who you are as a human being. And I know full well that you will make incredibly good use of it and pay it forward.
100%. Bravo. 100%. Mentorship and just service have always just been pillars of my life, just because of my personal story. Having people look out for me as a teenager, whether that's, you know, teachers that I had in high school that were keyed into my home life situation and, you know, kept on checking on me to make sure that I didn't fall through the gap. And I'm not unique, and I'll tell anyone this. There was nothing exceptional about me as a student that made teachers check on me more than anyone else. I just think it is the willingness of people to stand in the gap, of people to pay it forward, of people to identify a need and fill it. And that's what I'm all about.
Hey, so you're probably looking at us wondering why the sudden change of clothes. We are not superheroes that just came out of a phone booth. We actually, you know, in the process of making a podcast, sometimes there's hiccups. And so you're working through that and ensuring that you continue to have continuity of a great episode, because Journey has left so much in terms of nuggets and wisdom, and we're going to keep it going right now. So Journey, please, can you share with us an obstacle you faced on this journey to college and or through college, and how did you navigate that?
I would say the biggest obstacle that I faced during my senior year especially was losing my mom. My mom passed away during my senior year, a few days before my birthday, which sucked a lot. And it was something that was completely unexpected. And, you know, I know I'm not alone in grieving and in losing a family member, especially during such a crucial time in your college career, especially as a fly student. And, you know, almost having this graduation, kind of having this, you know, capstone moment be such a crown jewel for your family, and not having a key person around to witness that. That was hard. Went through a lot of self-doubt. Should I even be here anymore? You know, kind of what's the point of graduating? Even though I was so close, I only had another semester left. So how did I manage it? I took a break. And that's something that I recommend that any student does when they are just kind of in over their heads, is just take a step back. So I left college. I left Bowdoin for a month, from October to November, to obviously do burials, but then also just to take care of myself and reground myself in my commitment to graduating and my commitment to making sure that I was doing what I could to honor her memory and put myself in a good position. So after coming back from that, I just had another level of clarity, another level of focus. It's still hard, you know, I'm human. And I think that's the most important thing to take away from this is, you know, you see people and they're very accomplished and they, you know, are kind of movers and shakers, but they're human and they deal with kind of regular everyday themes, human themes like loss and sadness and devastation. But I kept it pushing. And I think that's something that my mom also instilled in me is the kind of, you know, get up and fight again type of spirit. So that's really how I handled it. I took a step back for a significant period of time. I was very grateful to have professors that let me, that didn't expect papers, didn't expect tests or exams, and just kind of gave me the space to grieve in peace. You know, having community, having friends, having family. But then also knowing that it's bigger than you, you know, that's something that I learned throughout my journey, that I'm graduating not only for my parents and not only for my mom and in her memory, but I'm graduating for myself. So, you know, when you kind of get that boost and you get that purpose back again, it makes all the difference. So I came back and I had an amazing year. I had an amazing second semester. I think that was the most that I had ever enjoyed Bowdoin since I came, which is kind of ironic because it's like, wow, how is it that in the midst of such devastation, you can kind of come back? And I was commencement speaker. I was like runner up for homecoming queen. I did all types of stuff. I joined a mountain biking club. I just had a different level of, well, you know, the only way to go from the bottom is up. And that was kind of my mentality. So I put myself out there in a different way. And so that's how I recommend that anybody, any college student specifically that's dealing with grief, kind of handle that. Take a step back, but then also push forward.
Journey, that was so beautiful. And I was so proud of you as you were going through it. And I have no doubt that your mom was smiling at you the whole time. You know, I have this reputation for taking these deep and really meaningful moments and going, but let's talk about financial aid. And I want to put just a quick little footnote in there for our listeners, because you did one really important thing that might not seem like a big deal to you, but was really crucially important. And that is you didn't just say, okay, well, I need a break and leave. You communicated it with the school, you communicated it with your professors so that semester was not a loss. You finished all of your coursework that semester in really good standing. You know, maybe you had some extensions, maybe some teachers made some exceptions for you, but particularly as a fly student, there are a fixed number of semesters where you can receive financial aid. And had you just made the choice to be like, I'm out of here and go take a break, you would have lost that semester. And those consequences for you as a fly student would have been really detrimental. So while I realize that's kind of like an in the weeds sort of thing that might seem unimportant, I want our listeners to, number one, take away your lesson. But number two, don't just make decisions and act on them. Communicate with people and find out how to make that a reality without sort of hurting yourself and your progress in the process.
100%.
Absolutely fantastic. And I agree with everything that Linnell said. The other thing I want to super emphasize is just the ability, right, double clicking on this communication level of being able to engage even in such a trying time in your life where you probably just wanted to be unto yourself and crawl into your shell, where so many people, right, not just students, but so many people have a tendency to lean in towards and being able to communicate what was going on with yourself, with the administration to be able to bring these things to life. And so communication is key on your journey. Don't think you have all the answers. Don't think you know how to sort of navigate everything and don't pull into yourself. Identify those individuals you can bounce things off of and talk to about the best ways to get from point A to point B while you're dealing with whatever may be happening in your life itself, right?
100%. So, and also just to jump back in, you know, I had previously mentioned the concept of having good credit. you know, when you're a student, specifically as a fly student, because having good credit, having good relationships with your classmates and with your professors and with administration, that's your safety net. So when things like this happened to you, the way that the community rallied around me, even though I was a fly student, even though I'm essentially kind of in this academic space by myself, helped me kind of get through this time because I had that good credit, because I had all these relationships that I had maintained over years since I was a freshman. So, you know, when I came to the dean and I told him, hey, I'm out. I'm not staying here. I got to go back to New York. I have things that I have to handle. Everyone stood behind me and said, go ahead, you know, Bowdoin will be here when you get back. And so it's important to have that good credit because you really never know what can happen in the course of your 4 years. And you would hope that nobody experiences anything tragic, but it might not even happen to, you know, your family member. It could happen to you. It can be illness. It can be an injury. It can be something that is completely unexpected like this was. But if you have good credit, it'll help to catch you in a different way. So 100%. This illustrates that.
And I would just like to add that one of the things that I think high school students fear are college professors. I think high school teachers often say, you know, your college professors aren't going to give you extra credit. Your college professors aren't going to give you extensions. And in my experience, high school students are often like kind of wide-eyed and scared of college professors. And then they get onto the college campus. And the next time you talk to them, they have this realization that like, these are people. These are real people with real lives who have a real sense of empathy. But you know, kind of to highlight what you said, Journey, if you build that social capital, if you build those relationships, those professors know who you are, they know how you function, and they know when you are not able to be on your game. If you are the person who's always asking for an extension, always making an excuse for why something didn't get turned in, don't show up to class, show up to class late consistently, you don't have that social capital and you may not get that kind of grace. So I think that was just kind of brilliant advice. And I really thank you for sharing what I know is a really difficult time in your life, but I said it before and I'll say it again. Your mom continues to beam with pride. I know it.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
So on that note, let's kind of finish up on a lighter note. And we have a section called College Condensed, and it's just a couple of rapid fire questions. And we just kind of want your first reaction to them.
Okay.
So my first question is, what scared you most about going to college?
Not having access to public transit. I am a true city kid. I cannot drive. I should not be behind the wheel of a vehicle. So not having access to public transit at Bowdoin, there's like this one bus called the Breeze Bus that comes around every hour, only takes you to a limited amount of towns, drops you off literally in the middle of nowhere in the most random places, costs $3. You can't Apple Pay. You have to have physical cash. Not having access to public transportation.
And for those of you who have never driven in New York City, I can tell you from firsthand experience, you could go your life without that and you will be no worse off. Public transit all the way in New York City.
Public transit. All right, next up, what would you say is a favorite college memory?
Oh, a favorite college. Oh, man. You know what? Looking back, I had some really great times in college. And I think it's important to highlight that because as a fly student, it's like, you know, you think college is this, you know, going to be drudgery and it's going to be different and it's going to be terrible. But I had some really great experiences. I'm just kind of doing a playback in my head. My favorite college experience, or like a really memorable one, would be the Christmas Town. Brunswick has it every year because Bowdoin is situated in this little college town of Brunswick, and they have people from the community dress up as Santa Claus and Mrs. Claus, and it's just, you know, it looks like a Hallmark card basically, or like a Hallmark movie. Lights are on the street. You know, they have a huge like 40-foot tree and they decorate it really nicely. And all the students just kind of rush downtown Brunswick. And, you know, there's caroling. And I never grew up really experiencing Christmas to that extent as a kid. And I know a lot of students probably don't experience that level of Christmas. Christmas is usually like communal with lots of family, but it's not caroling. It's not, you know, hot apple cider and all those types of things. So it was nice to get to kind of experience that with friends, especially. That's a key moment.
I love that image of the Hallmark moment. Can you share with our listeners a favorite, maybe book, podcast, movie, something that you'd recommend?
Ooh, okay. Favorite book, Just Mercy, Bryan Stevenson, because I always give that book credit, and I give Mr. Stevenson credit for starting me off on my legal career, for writing a book that really mobilized me in a different way, especially when I was at a point in my college career, like many students are, where you have no idea what you want to do. And there's 100% no rush to commitment or get married or, you know, whatever, to a particular career path. But that was the book that mobilized me to take up law, to take up the spirit of defense, to take up the spirit of advocacy. So Just Mercy, podcast, LSAT Demon podcast, helped me gain significant points in my LSAT score. And it's free. It's 100% free, especially for my, you know, law school students that are limited income, that are like, how do I, you know, go in fitting about studying and all these different things. I was working 40 hours a week as a paralegal while studying for the LSAT. I took it twice. And the first time I got my score back, terrible, decided to completely shift and kind of change strategy. And podcasting was a great way to do that. So shout out the LSAT Demon podcast. They also have a platform, but I 100% recommend the podcast because it's just a great way to listen and get little tips that'll improve your score. Another podcast I listen to is like a guilty pleasure, Sisters Who Kill. It's about Black women who just go off the hinge and murder people. Definitely not saying that you should murder people, but if you're into true crime, and if you're into true crime around a very specific subset of serial killers, then hey, they exist and their stories are just as twisted. So if you like that, I'd recommend that.
Excellent. Thank you for that sharing. If you could find yourself in a time machine going back to have a conversation with yourself before you started your collegiate exploration and then your application, what advice would you give to yourself before you embarked upon that journey?
My lighting. I'd tell myself to be less critical. And I think this is something that a lot of FLY students need to hear, because I think we are our biggest critics. And I think as a FLY student, a lot of us don't recognize our own superpowers. You know, it'll be easy for someone to look at us and say, wow, you've overcome so much. You're great. You know, you managed to kind of turn lemons into lemonade in this really key way. And a lot of FLY students will go, just being humble. And listen, 100% be humble, have humility, but also be your biggest endorser, be your biggest supporter, be your biggest advocate. So I would 100% go back and tell myself that is, talk up yourself a little bit more. I feel like, as you know, working in the professional world has helped me develop the skill of self-promotion. But as a high schooler, I totally didn't have that. And people would look at me and just say, well, like, why do you kind of, you know, you're doubting your skill set, you're feeling insecure, you know, but we see potential, you know, we see things that, you know, you have a capability to go really far. So I would tell FLY students, be less critical. And be your cheerleader, be your champion. If you, you know, had a really hard year that you bounced back from, tell people about that. And feel good in that. So I would go back and give myself that. And I'd give myself a hug. I go back and give myself a hug for just for coming so far and for still walking forward, even when sometimes things look a little bit uncertain, you're not sure, especially being the first in your family to navigate some of these spaces and not having anybody particularly to ask for guidance. but just stepping anyway, because you kind of believe that something's gonna work out. I don't, maybe I'm delusional, but that's how I've always felt.
I hardly think you're delusional. If I could put it another way, I would call it giving yourself some grace.
Yes.
And you know, none of us are perfect. None of us can claim that. Life is a learning adventure. And so as life puts those valuable lessons in your path, give yourself a little grace and then give yourself a little hug when you have made it through one of those or past one of those obstacles.
Right.
So, Journey, can't thank you enough for spending this time with us. I think it's been so incredibly, incredibly valuable for our listeners, for Rashid and I, and such a pleasure. Always just immense gratitude for you.
Oh, thank you guys. This is great. You know, I wish I would have had a podcast to kind of walk me through, navigating I had AHS, so I'm very fortunate in that manner. But definitely would have, a podcast definitely would have been a bit more accessible. Somebody is knocking at my door. I don't know who it is, but